Okay, thanks for your indulgence in that. It turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, Sam Harris is saying that we can get a moral base out of science. We don't need all this other stuff. And what do you think about that?
I didn't see science in there anywhere.
No, but...
How about reason?
Reason. Well, the title of it is, I don't think we ever saw the title, but it was had to do with can you get a moral base, a moral landscape out of scientific inquiry? You know, can you plot it that way?
Well, he did say science many times.
Yeah, he used the word. Yeah.
I have a point to make. And you talk about purpose, whether that's a good idea, a bad idea, a moral idea, a wrong idea, or a right idea. And we have our own sense of modesty, if you want to call it that. Is it a good idea to walk around naked or not? And this is the same question, whether you're covering your eyes or your private parts.
Are you asking a moral question or a health question?
No, it's a moral question. Is it immoral to walk around naked? Now, I think it depends on the context. Here in a nudist camp, obviously it's okay. What better walking down a public street?
But why should it
it's
be
the
different?
Same, it's the same question, I think.
Burkas, why should it be different for a man than a woman?
Yeah, why should it be?
The men should be walking around in burkas, too. I think that's the main thing. Just like in the United States and the world before the 70s.
You can argue the discriminatory point of view, but that I'm getting to my point about, you know, what... there's a Muslim sense of modesty, which includes covering the female body. Well, we cover parts of our body, and we don't think much about... I never thought about, I have the moral right to walk around naked outside.
I don't think it's a moral question
street.
At all. But I do have an answer.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I spent a week in Tahiti on a topless beach.
Oh, yeah.
And the first day I was totally distracted. By the second day I didn't care at all. And I realize that I'm better off with women walking around with tops on because it makes them look better when they don't have them.
Well, it reminds me.
But that's not a moral issue. That's just a practical one.
I think it was revolting.
You already have my emails.
It seems to me he's raising a very important question. I think it's a very useful one when he talks about human flourishing. And I think there are ways we can investigate human flourishing. And I think that's very, very important. However, I don't know that in the history of philosophy, people would have said human flourishing and morality are the same thing. I think, for example, if you ask people about abortion, you have people on one side or the other. And the question for them is not, how will this make people feel? Will they be better citizens? They will say something is right or wrong. And in the history of philosophy and ethics, you've had a strong distinction between people like Bentham from a utilitarian thing about the greatest good for the greatest number and who gets happy, against Immanuel Kant, who says we have a duty, do the right thing. And he's, I think, entirely talking about the utilitarian perspective, rather than assuming there is a possibility of having an assumption about some things being right and wrong, quite apart from your measurement of flourishing.
That's a good point. And I think we've agreed in the West to go with the utilitarian approach. That's really what's written in the preamble of the Constitution. The purpose of government is to give people opportunity, general welfare. You know, you find your own happiness, but we'll give you the opportunity. We'll give you the freedom. We'll give you the economic opportunity. And you find happiness if you can. With Kant, it was more like, this is what you must do.
The other problem I had with Sam Harris is that I think he assumes that everybody wants the same thing. Although there was times that he got away from that. And that maybe not everybody wants to flourish, and maybe not everybody wants well-being.
But he agreed that there are many peaks. He isn't saying that everybody wants the same thing. He covered that.
But you can't say there's one moral system that accommodates all these different...
He didn't
conceptions
say that.
Of
but he didn't say that, Rick. He said you can measure whether things are about flourishing. And you can measure a lot of that.
In my opinion, the system of values that's optimal is one that allows you to to do what you want to do, as long as you're not harming others. If you
the libertarian,
you tell her. I'm saying it again. So if you don't want to live the way I want to live, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. But we're not talking about how you should live. We're talking about giving you the opportunity to be yourself,
as long as it doesn't harm other people.
Right. There's limits.
I this reminds me of an article that Bill Freyer wrote in the OHO back in October 2015. He talked about the five different. What was it? Where was that? Five different things that people used in their ethics. The first one was harm, that we should avoid harm, which I guess would be the part of the well-being and the flourishing. The other one was a sense of equality. Oh, here we go. And then another one was loyalty, authority, and sanctity. And I found that kind of interesting to talk about.
Thank you,
obviously, and he did, says, well, liberals believe one thing, conservatives believe another thing. He didn't talk about libertarians. Actually, libertarians want to consume power.
What is sanctity? Is that in a religious sense?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. This,
yeah, Bill is basically born from Jonathan Haidt.
From who?
Jonathan Haidt. Jonathan, some people say Haidt, some Haidt. H-A-I-D-T.
Oh, that, yeah.
He's mentioned here.
Jonathan... And Haidt says, historically, there have been four kinds of perspectives on morality. The liberals have got two of them. The conservatives have all five. The liberals, and so the liberals are much narrower because basically liberals developed in trading cities where you couldn't have loyalty to your group when you were with another group. You couldn't have loyalty and forcing people to listen to your God when they had a very different God. You know, that kind of stuff. So the liberals narrowed it down to be nice to people, basically, and treat people fairly. Mm-hmm. Whereas the conservatives still think it's really important to be loyal to your group, to be loyal to your God, to do things that are nice. And that's the sanctified thing. Don't sleep with your sister. Don't eat your dog. Don't like that kind of stuff. And liberals would say, well, and Sam Harris would say, well, is anyone hurt? Okay. If nobody's hurt by sleeping with your sister, what's wrong with it? If the dog is nutritious, why not eat it? Just because you used to love it, now it's dead. What's the problem? And that's what Bill's article is reflecting, I think.
What I found interesting is these five values is the prioritization of the value. You got two values that are in conflict, which one wins over? Now, we talked about harm and equality being liberal values, but which one, I would say the left or progressives probably value equality more than, say, a libertarian, whose only concern is harm, except when it comes to government. Then they're willing to concede the equality question.
I think I've seen this, not just with Dawkins, too, on... When he gets pinned down, it's human flourishing is the right thing to do and how to go. You can be an atheist and agree that this is a good moral basis to live your life.
But my question would be, do we as humanists or whatever we call ourselves, do we think there are any values other than human flourishing? Is the rest of that stuff basically poppycock?
Because
I think that's a real issue. Because Sam Flourishing is saying human flourishing, that's what is moral, that's right and wrong. And then the other people who say no, loyalty to the people who brung you, that's really, really important. The liberal tradition would say, what's really important is don't hurt anybody.
Why would the liberal tradition say, to loyalty? I'm a liberal, and I strongly believe in loyalty.
Well, the reason was the one I gave before, is that I think the liberal notions, everybody had all five of them at the beginning, basically. And then, over time, as you had more and more port cities and more trading, and people were living in environments that are different, they found their group wasn't there to be loyal to, and they couldn't expect others to be loyal. So... That historically dropped down.
Loyalty has to be reciprocal, like tolerance. You're not going to be tolerant to those that are intolerant to you. You're not going to be loyal to those that are loyal to you.
But that's being nice. And liberals and conservatives all agree that you should be nice. What liberals don't agree on is that there is anything that's necessarily sanctioned, that there's any right, unless somebody is hurt by it, there's nothing wrong with doing anything. Would almost be a liberal statement.
I wouldn't say it that way. I would say that if no one is harmed, you're free to do it. But I can tell you a lot of things that I would consider wrong, but wouldn't impose upon you.
Well, then you're a little bit conservative in that typology.
Really? You can't get more liberal than me.
Well, what about nudity? Does nudity harm anyone? Is it okay? Does everybody agree it's okay?
What
harm
does nudity do?
What?
The only people that are harmed by nudity are the ones who have been trained to be offended. I mean, it may harm the nude person to get a sunburn and melanoma, but now you're talking about health issues.
Some people get melanoma, some don't.
Yeah, but
some people have peanut allergies, some people don't.
If we're limiting to the moral, remember that our ancestors walked around nude. Who was offended? Our ancestors lived completely different lives than they did. They lived in one-room domiciles. They watched their parents have intercourse. They watched their mothers menstruate. They watched their grandmothers die. And none of that damaged them. It was a different life, a different time. They weren't moral issues. Today, we have other choices. So we redefine different standards. But to just say that you have to believe this or that to be moral or immoral, I don't understand that. To me, there's one moral value only. One moral value only. And they all come from this one, empathy. I tell the truth to you because I want you to tell the truth to me.
Is that like the golden rule, do unto others as
it is the golden, have others? It is the golden rule. It's the only thing. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Love one another. Feel what he feels and give him what he would have. When I say I want you to tell the truth, it's because I want you to tell, because I'll tell the truth to you if you'll tell the truth to me. And I'll be kind to you if you'll be kind to me. And those are where all values come from.
I have my own version of the golden rule. Not only do unto others as you would have.
As they would have done to them.
Because the problem is everybody has a different conception of what they want done to them.
Right, it has to be modified slightly.
Yeah,
it's not doing to them what you want done to you, it's doing to them what they want done unto them. That's really more correct.
So I go beyond that.
I understand that. Some people call that the platinum rule. Because it's a slight modification.
Yeah.
But it's the same idea, reciprocity.
Yeah.
I saw that TED talk by Jonathan. And he says that babies are born with certain values. They're born with them. And I don't know whether it's 3 or 5 or something, but they've done studies on this, and when you're born, you're already a human being, and you have some morals.
Babies,
what
are
morals
nice.
Are they?
Babies are born pretty nice.
They are.
They're born atheists and they're born libertarians.
Take an 8-month-old kid. If you drop something, the kid will go over and pick it up and give it back to you and smile. Mm-hmm. Like we're not simply competitive and against each other. There's a built-in identification of us with each other.
Right.
Within limits.
Yeah. I believe that that TED talk was really good. That he had. He was a lot funnier than Sanders.
Which he?
Jonathan Haidt.
Jonathan, yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
But he really pushes, and increasingly more and more so in his writings, his fifth one, the notion about, what was the word, the sanctity.
Sanctity, I don't really know what he meant. Mean in a religious sense?
The examples he gives, he would say there's a huge, an enormous spectrum. And it's negative and positive. At one level of that spectrum, it's about you get unclean if you see women who are menstruating, keep them away from things. There's all kinds of negative
things.
That's
a religious notion.
That's around sanctity.
Right.
And then there will be ones in there about don't sleep with your sister, eh? And don't eat your dog. And at the other level, there will be things like how transcendence listening to music and saying, this is bliss. So he would say that fifth one is a whole spectrum from the nasty things that you that are bad to the bliss and so on in religious experience and music and that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, I understand what you're saying now.
That's his.
But when they say, don't sleep with your sister, that's more of a medical
There's a medical aspect to it.
Yeah.
Because of the inbred diseases.
Yeah, so they found out.
That's putting it in utilitarian terms.
Yeah, it's not a good thing to do.
The people who believe this is wrong wouldn't say you shouldn't sleep with your sister because you might get some disease or something. They would say you shouldn't do it because it's wrong.
Well, because you create monster babies, you know, or some genetic problem.
But my question is there anything that's genuinely wrong that even if it doesn't go against human flourishing, is the only definition of right and wrong whether it's good for people in some kind of measurable sense? And Sam Harris is inclined towards saying human flourishing is it. It doesn't matter whether you sleep with your sister, doesn't matter whether you eat your dog.
I think it matters whether you have children with your sister. Sleeping with her is a different thing. And it also matters whether you kill your dog to eat it or whether you eat it when it drops.
But then he's saying now you've put the argument, you're saying it's a human flourishing thing. If you can show that there are medical problems with sleeping with your sister, obviously that has difficulties.
But that's not a moral
question. So you're not disagreeing with him in principle.
That's not a moral question anymore.
I'd like to add some background to the video. This video was done in 2010. The reason that is significant, 2010 was when Sam Harris published his third book, The Moral Landscape. So what we saw here is a 20-minute video, but his book expands his ideas and created quite a stir and discussion. It led to an essay contest that became known as the moral challenge, the moral challenge to Sam Harris's premises. There was a cash prize, and there were 424 essays submitted, so significant discussion on the book that went on for several years, and Sam Harris defended his point as you would expect him to. Those conversations can be sorted roughly into two types of conversations. One is the traditional science versus religion discussion about moral values, and I think most of us would take Sam Harris aside if you frame it in that context, science versus religion. There was a second side to it. That was the discussion within the secular community, which became a conversation between the science and the philosophers.
Daniel Dennett.
If you want to, if you're interested in this kind of thing, what atheist moral philosophers has said about what Sam Harris is saying in his book, I think is well worth considering. My personal opinion is I'm very much on the side of the atheist moral philosophers. I think they really take Sam Harris apart on his basic premises. Sam Harris has continued to defend his premises and dig in. He's moved on since then.
Who are you referring to,
Dennett?
Or Dawkins? Or who are you putting on? Is it mainly Dennett?
It's Dennett. There's been a very vocal discussion.
Well, it goes way beyond that.
No, but who are the moral philosophers is what I was wondering.
I'd have to research that.
Okay.
But generally, the community, academics mostly, professors of moral philosophy, not the religious moral philosophers, the secular moral philosophers. The whole argument got very sophisticated. It gets very technical very quickly.
Can you give any of the objections to Harris's position?
You get into whether morality is ultimately, let's use flourishing as an example. Can you objectively determine what is well-being, what is human flourishing? So there's two schools of thought. Sam Harris will say, yes, you can induce that. There are others who say that there is no way of doing that without it ultimately being subjective. That's one premise.
How about the way I framed it? How about the way I framed it? Give you the opportunity to find your own path. You define what well-being is for you.
The individualistic view, or are we talking about the collective?
I'm not going to tell you how to live, but I'm going to try to set up a society where you can do what you want. where you have economic opportunity, political freedoms, education, all the things that are necessary to find that happiness if you can.
Yes, but what we need, and these are other dimensions that come into play, that's well and good, but ultimately then you need a mechanism to resolve the clashes between values. Because as long as you and I are doing our own thing and we're not interfering with each other, that's fine. The minute we create interference, we need a resolution.
Where are there clashes except for one person wants to impose their values on another?
No, lots of them. That's what government called vaccination would be one example.
Yeah, good example.
Okay.
Chlorine in the water.
Prostitution is a good example.
The problem is he's giving a very simplistic. He's making an attempt to provide a measure, and the measure is very simple, which is great for us because we're simple people. But but it's more complicated than that, and I think that's what you're saying is that the other people are saying the measure. It's great to have an idea of we can measure goodness versus evil, but it's very simple. And I like his because it's simple, but it's more complicated than that. Vaccination is one example where you've got the common good versus the individual freedom. Something's got to give, you know.
A good example is prostitution, which is legal in some areas, illegal in others. So that becomes, how do you resolve in a society where you have different people who think that for well-being of society, prostitution should be fine. Others
should
are
be fine.
Okay.
Should be fine.
Legal. Should
illegal.
Be okay. Should. So those are the kind of conflicts that have to be resolved.
Okay. Even the one with your sister is dicey because, you know, maybe you're not hurting anybody, but on the other hand, it would have a psychological effect on the family. And now there's a romantic relationship going on that's not just brother and sister and could have damaging effects on the family.
Well, maybe there's two conversations. One is, how should society be structured? And then within the confines of that, what choices should you make?
And that's where things like government and all that kind of stuff comes in. So it's not so simple as just being good for what's best for flourishing.
But still, we have a target.
Yeah, sure.
And the target is different than the one that the religious people
absolutely.
Have, which is their book.
Anything that anything you can do that to create a measurable quantity, in my opinion, is good. Because that's what makes physics so successful. You have things you can measure. And it's meters and mass and all those things, you can put them on a scale and check it out. That's the problem with well-being in society. It's not a very precise thing.
And you run the danger, when you say that, of implying that anything that can't be measured has no value.
But I'm not saying that. I'm saying we need to work harder at getting good measures.
You're saying those other things are harder to determine.
Just harder to do, right.
Yeah.
What if flourishing creates overpopulation?
Then it's not flourishing.
Like not flourishing. Yeah. 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 So then we have a different morality, but things are...
Right. You have the conflict between the flourishing of the individual and the flourishing of a collection of individuals.
Exactly, exactly. And those are going to be in conflict a lot.
Yes.
I also want to talk about Ayn Rand. She is in a long line of people who believe that ethics can be reduced either to reason or science. So she follows the reason. And her underlying like flourishing and well-being, she claims that life is the number one thing that determines whether or not something is ethical or not, which I find kind of odd for Ayn Rand because she was pro-choice on abortion, and she also smoked tobacco, probably killed her. But she probably didn't know at the time that when she was smoking her tobacco.
Just anything that saves your life is the...
Well, she says life is the just like flourishing and well-being. That everything is based on whether it's life-affirming or not. Now, I thought
her philosophy is very cold.
But, you could say that about science-based ethics, too.
What's science-based ethics?
So general.
What ethics come out
of science? Hers is reason-based ethics. Now, it's her interpretation.
You just
gave
me a
value. That's the other problem I have, is that I don't want Ayn Rand telling me what's... Moral.
You just gave me a value for Ayn Rand. How did science develop that? Which science?
No, I'm talking about reason. She was using reason. She wasn't using
reason
science.
Isn't science. And neither reason nor science can tell you what you ought to want, as Sam
Harris said. She says, based on the number one value, life, that you care. Now, she didn't like drugs because she thought drugs sucked the life out of
There's no value in science or reason. All science tells you is what's true about the world, and all reason tells you is what's true. If this is true, then that is true.
But none of us tell. What? Ayn Rand is.
Do you disagree with what I said?
No, I don't. I completely agree with you. I just
can't get value.
Sam Harris disagrees with you.
I don't think so.
Well, I think you're saying you can't go from yes to odd.
Right.
And Sam Harris is saying yes, you can.
I didn't hear him say that.
He's saying,
if
we know that something makes you healthier, therefore you ought to do that. To me, is the gist of that.
His basic premise
I didn't
is
hear that, but
that science can create a moral framework.
Sorry, I missed that. What are we calling science? To me, science is observation and experiment,
evidence,
and hypothesis. None of this is science. What we're talking about is philosophy. A group of people getting together and sitting there and talking about how things ought to be. Are we calling that science?
Well, I think you and I probably agree, but that's the Sam Harris premise, that science can do it.
Well, why don't we use language that we understand and can agree on? If he's calling what you and I would call rational ethics, if he's calling that science.
No, I don't think we would disagree with Sam Harris's use of the word science. I think you and I and Sam Harris would have a pretty general agreement of what science is. I don't think that's.
Then what can science add to this discussion?
Well, it can measure how
Formers, that's
you do this.
You and I both disagree with Sam Harris.
Yeah. I can't believe that I disagree with Sam Harris. Or Sam Harris believes something very different from what I believe. I just think he's using language differently.
He's trying to find a measure that can be measured. Yeah. His measure is too simplistic. But that does. It's not wrong to try and find one. I applaud his efforts.
I agree with everything he says just about. So if he uses a word differently than I do, I tend to think that he means what I mean and he's saying it differently.
You can't really have a science unless you can have a measurement. Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And so he's trying to find a measurement, that's all.
But he's saying you can measure. If you do this to your women...
Right, then you can measure their well-being.
You can measure... in some ways, happiness.
Right.
And if you don't do it, you measure it.
Exactly.
And you compare the two.
And you compare the two. And whichever one comes out better is the right one.
The only measurement of happiness is people's opinion. And are they happy? I mean, you can't look at someone and go, you're happy, you're not. They have to tell you.
You can't take it out of context either.
They have some context.
Stephen, in this case, I don't think you are fully understanding what Sam Harris is saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you elaborate?
I think, as I understand it, he is saying that morality can ultimately be reduced to objective measures.
Right.
That's
right.
His premise.
Right.
And
his Burka measure, his Burka argument is a very good one. I think all things being equal, if you found a way to really objectively measure the net happiness of Burka wearing societies versus non-burqa wearing societies, you would find, if you could get rid of all the variables, that non-burqa wearing societies were happier than burqa wearing societies. Can I prove that right now? No, but I think that that's probably a true statement.
Well, Sam Harris means something radically different than what I think he means. I probably disagree with him. But like I said, I've liked almost everything I've heard from that man, and I can't believe we're that far apart on this.
I don't think you are, but I just think he's making, he's using science in a way that you wouldn't use science.
That's what I've been suggesting. We're using language differently. We don't have different ideas. We're just using different words to name those ideas.
Right. So what do you think Sam Harris means?
I think he means roughly the same thing I mean, that the optimal environment is one in which the most happiness, utilitarian philosophy, the most happiness for the most people can be achieved. And that they have to define that for themselves. They'll tell you if they're happy or not. And we should look for a world where people have the chance to find that.
So, what does that have to do with science?
Nothing. Not really. No, that's not what he's saying.
Oh,
making this video about science.
Oh, but the science is the observation, is the measurement of the happiness.
We need to get past science. If science means test tubes, it's not part of this discussion. If science means... contemplation and reason and intelligence. Okay, but that's not what I mean when I say science.
But I think it's important that we understand what Sam Harris means when he uses the word science.
Well,
and Sam Harris has a degree in neuroscience. I would
Yeah, I'm sure he's using it in a rigorous sense.
Right.
He wants to use
the scientific method. He's using the scientific method.
Well, I don't object to that. If you can measure happiness with brain scans, then I have no problem with that. Right now, we can only measure it with surveys. We have to ask people.
Well, in sociology, that's science.
Okay.
Don't put everything into chemistry.
Okay. But again, over and over again, I want to say we have to clearly define what we mean by that word.
Well, he's only got 20 minutes.
You hit on the second major area where there is conflict within the secular community, and that is whether the mind is reducible to the brain. There is not consensus on the,
right.
in the secular.
There is not.
So Sam Harris is of the camp that essentially the mind and brain are one and the same. Understand the
brain? The mind is a product of the brain.
Yeah. Okay. Well, more than that.
And the nervous system.
There is another group within the secular community, not getting into the soul and the religious discussion, but within the secular community, there are philosophers who see that differently. That spills over into an understanding
what's
of morality.
What's the different viewpoint?
Well, the different viewpoint essentially is that the mind is not reducible to the brain.
What does reducible mean?
It's part of the whole
that
body.
It can be fully understood by understanding the physical components. That if you fully understand the brain physically, you will fully understand the mind.
Okay.
That's the concept. That concept, there is not a consensus in the secular community.
Okay. I wouldn't agree with that.
But
I wouldn't agree with that statement. That's part of it, and
then they tie it to what Sam says.
What do you mean by understand in that sense? What do you mean by understand in that sense?
Much like we understand water is made up of...
Well, we understand it's made of H2O, but we can't model what it's going to do. I mean, I can't. If you pour a glass of water on the table, I can't tell you where each individual component is going to go. Mm-hmm. It's too complicated.
Okay.
So I understand. We can. Are you saying there's something in the mind that is not present in the brain?
I'm trying not to say anything other than that there is a significant division.
Uh-huh.
There's two within the secular community. I'm not talking about the differences with the religious community.
Right, no, I know.
Within the secular community,
mm-hmm.
there is a different understanding
mm-hmm.
of the mind-brain relationship. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
In his talk, he said that you only get change in culture as a result of changes in the brain. Now, I don't know what he's using for brain. Is he meaning in the mind, or is like? But the difficulties are people aware of this book Sapiens?
No.
Written by Harari.
No.
It's one of the most interesting books in the last couple of years on all of this. But what he would argue is that the human species became so dominant not because of biology, but because of some kind of cognitive revolution. That was basically about our ability to tell stories. And we tell stories all the time. We tell stories about money. We tell stories about God came down in the form of Jesus. And the main thing about telling stories is that as a result of telling stories, we're able to develop huge systems of cooperation. You would never get a monkey to, if you said, please give me this banana, and I will reward you by giving you 10 bananas in the afterlife. A monkey just would say, you're out of your mind. But we do that all the time. Whether it's 72 virgins, actually it's raisins, should be raisins rather than virgins. But what he makes a strong thing is that all of our culture of defeating 70,000 years ago the Neanderthals, conquering Australia and killing all of their wildlife, all of this is because we have the ability to tell stories that get people cooperating together. Now, is that a change in the brain? I think it's not a change in the brain, not from a biological point of view. That's a change because we started, for some reason or other, telling stories all over the place, and that's what makes us the dominant creature on Earth. Now, and that's not the hardwiring, it's something else.
It's really, what led to the storytelling ability
yep.
was the emergence of self-awareness. we are self-aware in a way that is different than and yeah. that combined with other things gives us an ability to tell stories.
And therefore to cooperate on the basis of those stories.
Everything flows. Yeah.
Now, I don't know that there's any change there. How would I know? In the hardware of the brain. But certainly cultures have changed without the biology changing, because we're changing all the time, because one day somebody tells us this myth about how we have to run society, the next day we change our minds and we go another way. That's not because of biology, that's because of the way the memes work and all that.
We're back to your threshold, Henry.
Yeah.
We're back to your threshold.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Spandrels.
Is it ever ethical to lie?
Yes. Oh, obviously.
Yes,
sure.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. Never ask Donald.
Well, does euthanasia and suicide contribute to flourishing and well-being?
Well, Kant would disagree.
What?
Bentham would agree. Kant would say no lying is wrong. Bentham would say if it's useful, lie.
Like it's, what they call a noble lie.
Euthanasia is a good example of the failure of Sam Harris's thinking. How can you resolve the question from a moral point of view of whether euthanasia is good or bad, and do that in a way that's reducible to facts? If somebody, I have an opinion on euthanasia, but that's what it is, it's an opinion.
I thought he does it in flourishing, idea of flourishing.
That's to do with flourishing.
If a human being doesn't feel he's flourishing for some horrible disease or something and decides to do, I mean,
what do you do with two people who both want to flourish but have different opinions on music?
The fact is, they're both right and they're both wrong. Like, morality is simply a made-up story.
How do you like it?
Wasn't a case that suffering overrules flourishing?
Hey, we euthanize our animals. We euthanize our animals, and it's an act of kindness.
That's what we
mercy killing.
We feel that.
Yeah. So I mean,
things we'd never do to humans.
It depends what your intention is and what's true. If the life has nothing but suffering ahead of it, then euthanasia is merciful.
But who says kindness is the be all and end all of morality?
I said empathy.
That's an assumption that Sam Harris would make, but many ethicists would disagree.
But I realize I can't say more than just my opinion. My opinion is empathy, and kindness derives from that. Just like honesty derives from that. Just like loyalty derives from that. Just like integrity derives from that. They're all things I want to use, so I'm going to get back.
They're part of the systems that we agree on.
Right.
And there are others who would say, no, you're wrong. Some things are wrong, and just because you're being empathetic doesn't make them right.
I can't argue that being empathetic is the right thing to
do.
It's just intuition I can't escape.
Will you tell me who wrote Sapiens?
His name is Harari. He's an Israeli historian, actually. And I think he got into this subject because they wouldn't let him teach the things he wanted to teach. And so, anyway.
You're talking about H-A-I-E-T?
Harari, I think maybe, is his
name.
But if you just Google the word Sapiens, he'll come up.
Well, here's this thing. There's this ship that sails from Amsterdam to the middle to the Mediterranean and comes back and performs euthanasia.
Yeah.
No, abortions.
Abortion.
Okay.
The same thing. Anyhow.
Some would say.
So what happens is, as time goes by, the ship gets more and more filled up. Which to me is an indication that it's popular.
Well, yes.
Now, probably you can have the same situation, which is with, euthanasia. Is it occupied with 20% of the capacity? Is it 10 years from now, 3 times as much? And you keep all these numbers, which, by the way, is called science, applied science.
So this is really happening. There really is a shift.
And
they're getting outside of Spain. Are they going into international waters?
Yeah, they go into international waters, say outside of Spain or whatever country.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the women who
need that.
Yes.
Serious?
No, it's true. And there is a lot.
So anybody can make that choice without breaking the law.
Because then they can go into international waters, exactly.
I'm glad I was just on that.
Then Canada,
is it okay?
Abortion is legal in Canada, right? Abortion is or is not legal in Canada?
It has been ever since the great Canadian humanist Henry Morgenthau.
And, that, and well, that's
the,
what
the,
year?
The problem isn't that it's law, that's legal. It's just that it's not illegal. And they've never been able to, in Parliament, agree on any way of coming to an agreement, and therefore it's legal. It's like they.
It's not illegal.
It's not illegal. Henry Morgenthau is a
How is legal different from not illegal?
Oh.
It's called the brain.
I think you're being facetious, or are you?
No.
Oh.
You just said it's not legal, it's just not illegal.
Well, oh, if
it's not a law.
Like, there is nothing on the books that makes it illegal.
Okay.
There's nothing on the books that makes it illegal to do it. But there's nothing on the books that in any way sanctions it.
Okay.
But people often make that distinction.
Fred, are you Canadian by any chance?
By any chance, yeah.
Oh, hey! To hell with the rest.
How about eating chocolate ice cream? Do you have a law legalizing that?
But what's more interesting, I think the abortion is old hat, I don't know. But is that we now have, it's now legal to have doctor-assisted suicide.
It is legal or illegal?
Legal.
Okay.
So, and that's been coming in for a few years, but now basically
that's explicitly illegal because of the statute supporting it in writing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have to be Canadian?
Okay.
Well, I think if you came up there, they'd be able to deal with it. I don't know them.
You're all going to vote, right? You're going to vote.
There are several states.
Hey, order, order.
It's on a political note. I want to make sure everybody votes this November.
Oh, yeah.
If you need help voting, Democrats Abroad will help you vote.
He expects you to vote. Well, I can vote.
Stand next to you and vote.
This is American votes.